Did you know that more than 95% of farms in Canada are family-run operations? Families that have been working the land for three or four generations. I didn't know this. And you, like me, probably didn't either, because most of us have little reference to the world of farming. Andrew Campbell does. He's a third-generation dairy farmer, and he's also a storyteller, to which he says is an unusual combination because most farmers work the farm for a reason. They really like Mother Earth and all of its inhabitants, but they've been content doing their jobs with little fanfare. But Campbell points out that in a world of social media and environmental campaigns, that's not a good idea. Farming is under the microscope from a variety of different constituencies that include, but are not limited to, consumers, regulators, politicians, and activists. Campbell says if we don't share our stories, the real stories of farming, then someone else is going to, and they're going to get it wrong. Campbell operates a dairy farm in southern Ontario, and he is also out telling the story of farming. One year, he challenged other farmers to join him and post a photo a day online. And then he took a huge leap forward and produced 52 Did You Know videos about farming called Dinner Starts Here, where he took viewers out to 52 farms across Canada. Fresh Air Media, his production company, continues to produce videos and podcasts because Andrew Campbell says farmers need to be heard as the food production authorities they are. I invited Andrew Campbell to join me for a Conversations That Matter Food for Thought episode about food production from the farmer's perspective.
Welcome to another episode of Dinner Starts Here. We are in beautiful southern Alberta today, and I mean, what else should we do but beef, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Sounds good. We've got Megan. Megan's showing us around Colk Farms. What's the farm? What's here?
So we are a family-owned and operated business. We're third-generation farmers. So at this feedlot, we have about 10,000 head of cattle that we feed from young up until they're old and ready to go to market.
Very cool. So third generation, so who in the family is involved?
So my grandparents started it, and now my my mom and my dad are the owners of it. And then I have two older brothers, and we're all part of the operation.
Oh, very cool. And then you've got help as well?
Yes. So we've been at this location for as long as I've been alive, and longer than that. Cool. And so we employ about 20 employees who are part-time or full-time, and all within the community, and whether they traveled from South Africa or from the United States or wherever to come work here. We've had people from all different walks and types of life here.
Welcome to another week, another farm, this time with Farmer Lawrence. How are you, Lawrence?
Very good. How are you?
Thanks for having us. You picked a perfect day to have us outside in the middle of February. It's probably the hottest day in February we've ever had.
Sometimes you get lucky.
This has worked good. We are in the woods, which you wouldn't think you'd farm a whole lot of things in the woods, but here in Canada, beautiful Ontario, you're farming maple syrup.
That's right.
And it's coming out of the sugar bush. Uh-huh. So maybe we can look over at the tree first.
Yep.
Show us where we start.
Okay.
Right here.
Sugar maple.
Yep.
You can't be tapping any other kind of tree but a sugar maple.
Well, you can tap other maples, but sugar maples are the best.
Are the best. Right. And you've got, I mean, when I was a kid, we hauled in like buckets of sap with grandpa. He thought that was a great job. And as a kid, we thought it was a great job too. You don't have buckets. What's with the blue line?
Well, when we got a lot of buckets when we were younger, and eventually we said, we can't do that anymore. So we switch to a more modern method with a pipeline and a vacuum system to gather the sap.
So you put this in, and it's just all attached to one line?
That's right. All these small blue lines travel from tree to tree on the end.
This time we are in beautiful Alberta. Baron's touring us around. Thanks for having us, Baron.
Thank you for coming. So we are on your dairy farm, Baron, and you've just finished up morning milking.
Yes.
Maybe you can give me a rundown as to the process. What does your morning look like as you go through morning milking?
So 5 o'clock, we'll get up, and as my brother and father chase in the cows behind our milking parlor, I'll slowly start milking them. We have a hired hand that will come and give us a hand.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Andrew Campbell, welcome to Conversations That Matter, food for thought.
Thank you for having me.
Where are you located?
We're located west of the city of London in southwestern Ontario, near the town of Strathroy.
In farm country.
In farm country. We've got a pile of acres of all sorts of grains, a lot of cattle and pigs and everything. We're really in, you know, we always brag a little bit about kind of, you know, Canada's farm belt in this area, just because there are, you know, hundreds of different products grown and some pretty good soils to be able to do it pretty productively.
You are a third generation farmer. Is that correct?
Third generation dairy. So my grandfather was the one that, you know, started the dairy side. If you look through my genealogy books, farming goes as far back as the books go back.
So you're unusual, especially in today's society. I mean, we've seen in the last 100 years, well, maybe even longer than that, this tremendous migration off the fields and into urban centers. And there were a whole bunch of reasons why that happened. But what also happened, of course, is that there became this disconnect between people who were buying the food from the people who were actually making it. And so let's just talk a little bit about your sort of career history. You weren't exactly sure that you were going to go into dairy farming business because you ventured into journalism for a little while, but it wound up bringing you back. Can you make that connection for us? You know, so why did you study journalism and then wind up coming back to farming?
Well, it probably goes back to my teenage years in which it's not like I didn't like farming. I just, for whatever reason, never thought of myself as actually coming back to the farm. What I did want to do was, as you said, you know, kind of pursue that, you know, the career of journalism. You know, I liked following current events and politics. And, you know, I was the cool kid that read the paper every day and watched the, you know, evening news. And, you know, it was just something I was interested in and wanted to be able to do that as well. So that's where I went off to school. But pretty quickly, the position I landed in was as farm director for a group of radio stations here in Ontario. And so I followed agriculture news, food industry news, you know, markets, all that kind of stuff was my job for a number of years. And it was one of those where, you know, I pretty quickly realized, you know, just how important the agriculture industry is and the food industry is. And, you know, your life priorities change. And I realized very fast that I was not going to be cut out for downtown Toronto or downtown Vancouver living, which is where you head if you want to keep moving up the ladder in journalism. So, you know, by then I'd met my wife and we decided that, you know, actually, you know, coming back and taking over the family farm was what we really wanted to do. So that's basically the path. And here we are today.
So through your storytelling, though, did you start to realize that people didn't have a very good understanding of how food was produced, especially in Canada?
Yeah, very much so. So especially through my journalism, you know, education and things like that, you know, I made a lot of friends that are, you know, the typical consumer that didn't grow up on a farm, have no agriculture experience. And, you know, for a lot of them, it wasn't necessarily a place of, you know, them being against anything of what, you know, farmers were doing or how food was produced. They just simply didn't know. And so based on, you know, a lot of the questions that I got from them, you know, kind of fell into this spot that said, you know, okay, well, why don't I show you how it's actually done? And, you know, once you do that, you find out that the vast majority of consumers say, oh, yeah, that actually makes sense now. I understand why something is done to produce the food.
So along comes about 2013, and you start to realize, okay, we're hearing messages about farming from people who don't really know about farming. We, as a people who are food producers, have a responsibility to start telling the real story to get into the, I bet you didn't know or did you know that kind of environment. And so you started posting on Twitter and even challenging other people who are food producers to do the same.
Well, I think the reaction was kind of twofold, depending on who it was. So you had the farmers who all of a sudden looked at that and said, oh, actually, that is really easy. I do have a camera in my pocket now. I can post, you know, from wherever I am. This is actually pretty easy and pretty straightforward to be able to show off what I'm doing as well. And the reality was, is that farmers, you know, kind of became more open to that because they saw consumers on the other side of that conversation who were coming in and saying, I just want to see and understand what's going on. I don't necessarily want to be against what you're doing. I just really come from a place as a consumer not understanding clearly. And so I think when those two kind of worked together and saw each other, all of a sudden there was that opportunity that, you know, we can get rid of a lot of, you know, that middle that's maybe filtering content one way or another and just have a consumer that's concerned about something or interested in something connect directly with a farmer.
The Canadian Center for Food Integrity did a survey last year about confidence in the food supply system. And consumers are saying the people they trust the most are the farmers. So do you find that when people actually are connecting with others like you, it gives them a level of confidence in the food that they're going to buy and eventually eat?
Yeah, and you made the very astute point in there that when they connect with a farmer, they have that confidence. And I absolutely agree with that, that when they make that connection, a lot of people then do, as I said before, come back and say, wow, that makes sense. I understand now. I'll go back to being concerned about everything else in my life and not worrying specifically about something. The challenge we face in agriculture and in food production is making that connection in the first place. And so usually what we find is where people are concerned or where people do have a certain motivation to buy a certain production method or a certain type of food usually comes from the point that they never made that connection in the first place.
What are some of the more common questions that you hear?
So certainly on the dairy side, you know, the ones that I get a lot are around antibiotic use, hormone use, you know, all kind of things that basically, if you've read it on the internet, probably someone is concerned about it out there. And so it's really just about having that conversation that here in Canada, we're not using growth hormones to increase milk production in cows. That doesn't happen. And then antibiotic
use. It's against the law, isn't it?
It absolutely is the law. Yeah, you just can't use it. It was never approved here in Canada, as it was in a few other places, including the U.S., you know, a couple of decades ago now. When it comes to antibiotic use, you know, there is that thought out there that, you know, you just pump them full of antibiotics and out goes the milk, when in fact it's not the case. We use antibiotics the same way I use them on my kids when something is sick. And I'll use it for the few days, whatever the prescription the vet says. In that period of time, that milk gets dumped down the drain, so there's no antibiotic residue. And in fact, in dairy, every single tank of milk is tested for antibiotic residue. So it's one of those things that, yes, we absolutely use them sparingly when an animal's sick, but it's not usually the same as what people have started to believe based on what they've read. So those are two of the big ones from dairy. And then you just get into other things about, you know, environmental care. You know, you mentioned pesticides, you mentioned animal welfare, you know, more and more about carbon footprint, you know, different things like that, that people just, as I say, you know, maybe read something on Facebook, maybe see something in the newspaper, and then all of a sudden have some questions that, you know, maybe a farmer can help them answer.
And what does a modern dairy barn look like? And How does it improve the quality of life for the cows?
Yeah, so the whole thing, you said improve the quality of life for the cow. That's basically what we're trying to do. In the dairy side, the more comfortable that cow is, the more she's just going to do her natural behavior. She's going to eat, she's going to milk more. So it's in our best interest as well as hers to keep her comfortable. So what a modern barn looks like, it looks at a few different factors. So one, always have access to feed no matter what, because you put cows into a big pen, you've got boss cows, and you've got cows that kind of submit to that boss cow. So you've got to make sure there's feed there all the time, so that when that boss cow goes and lays down, the weaker ones, or the ones that are a little more timid, aren't going to actually go up and eat. You want fresh, clean water, because, we're smoking hot here in Ontario right now. They need all the water, just like us. They need to make sure they stay hydrated. Ventilation is an enormous one. How can we make sure we keep fresh, comfortable air through? It can be a challenge when it's hot to try to, you're just trying to move around 30 degree air, but, I don't know about you, but I find, I can actually get comfortable if I have a breeze and I'm in the shade. Even on a hot day, I can actually be fairly comfortable. So that's the whole goal with trying to keep them comfortable, is making sure they're shaded, and have that cool breeze. And then, beyond that, it's a clean place to lie down, somewhere comfortable, somewhere that where they can easily move around. I know, for us, we've made quite a few updates. And at one time, the cows always wanted to kind of go outside because it would be cooler outside than it was in the barn. Once we upgraded with, a whole bunch of, fans and automation and all that kind of stuff, we actually found the cows didn't want to be, we'd let them out and 20 minutes later, they'd all be at the door mooing to get back in.
So I also hear that there is a move within the dairy sector, and I recognize that it's costly, but to put in methane or carbon capturing systems inside the barn.
Yeah, so right now, the more common way you'll find is actually where they're going to capture it over a manure pit. Not necessarily in the barn, just because the one challenge that I don't think we figured out is, as I said, we try to keep these, big wide open barns, lots of ventilation, lots of air moving very quickly. All of a sudden, if you're trying to capture that all through one area, it becomes challenging. However, all manure is stored in, some kind of a pit or some kind of a lagoon, some type of area where it's obviously contained and not going to leak anywhere. And so particularly, some of the larger farms are working on, how can we then take the gas coming off that, take that manure, put it through a system that's then going to, almost treat it like natural gas, in that it's going to either go through natural gas lines in some cases, or more commonly, go through a generator, burn off, and produce electricity.
So is it safe to say that farmers are always looking at ways to innovate, to be better, and to be more in sync with the requirements of living in a, denser and denser world? And is that what led you to then start your video series? You started in 2017, Dinner Starts Here, where you went out and took viewers to 52 different farms over the course of a year. Were you basically, with those videos, trying to do what you just did with me, walk me through the process of being a dairy farmer?
Yeah, exactly. So certainly, one of the things that I said before, you mentioned the picture a day around our farm. My joke that I would tell people was that my cows just got tired of their picture taken. So I had to go find somebody else's cows. And it was just one of those situations where, I also realized that, there's an audience here that's interested, with a lot of farmers that maybe aren't comfortable telling their story. It's not that they want to hide anything. It's just that they're simply not comfortable, or unsure of how to go about, showing off what they're doing.
Some of them I found very interesting. I was looking at the one about the production of syrup.
We talked about the innovation in a lot of areas. It's come a long ways just in maple syrup. When I was a kid, there was a bucket on the tree that hung there, and, we as kids would trudge through grandpa's, bush and dump this sap into a bigger pail on the front of a tractor, And, you know, we got muddy and it was, you know, we had a great time, but it was pretty labor intensive. Whereas now you get that video was at the McLaughlin place. You know, those ones are, you know, they're dealing with lines, they're dealing with big tanks, they're dealing with a vacuum system, they're putting it through reverse osmosis. So all of a sudden they can take even more water out before it even hits the boiler so that it boils even faster. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, it's just come a long way as people have kind of figured out and wanted to innovate and wanted to tweak. And, you know, it was another thing you mentioned that farmers do want to continue to do that to say, okay, this worked really good this year. This didn't work so well. How do we fix that so we can do even better the next year?
So there's 52 of those videos and they're still on YouTube, aren't they?
Yes. Yep. They're all still there. They'll be there forever, I think. So.
Right. And they're under the banner Dinner Starts Here. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, or my username on YouTube is Fresh Air Farmer, just like it is everywhere else. So you can pretty easily find them there too.
And now you're focusing your attention on where the food goes once it leaves the farm. In other words, into a system of food production. What other hands touch it, and how does that affect the food? I think that these are all questions that people, all of us who consume food, would really like to understand rather than have uncertainty about the food that we want to eat.
You know, there's lots of conversations about how food is produced and why it's produced in certain ways that, you know, loses a lot in terms of context when you're just looking at a meme or just looking at a, you know, quick, you know, 30-second story on TV. And so I thought it important to, you know, let's break down some of these more complicated things and say, you know, whatever you decide you want to eat or feed your family or whatever is okay. You can make that choice, but know that whatever you read, it's probably a lot more complicated than that. So why not have that full picture so you can make your own decision?
Well, I want to continue to read your postings. I've been following you online, and I encourage you to keep up the great work of sharing messages about agriculture, you know, being that advocate that you are. I appreciate your work and messaging, because the more I learn about agriculture, the more I have come to realize just how complex it is. Andrew, thank you ever so much for taking the time to join me for this episode of Conversations That Matter, Food for Thought.
It's my pleasure, Stu, anytime.
Thank you to Bayer Crop Science for its support in making the production of this program possible.